Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Devoted public servants being tossed out the window by Donald Trump and personally attacked and losing their jobs when all they've ever done is serve the country as patriots.
Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Good night and good luck.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Lincoln Project Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Rick Wilson, and we are delighted to have you with us. This interview today is in that category of ripped from the headlines. We are delighted to have with us today Carol Lenning and Aaron Davis, who are the authors of a tremendous new book called Injustice: How Politics and Fear Vanquished America's Justice Department. These are both Pulitzer Prize winners. They are some of the smartest, most informed folks about the machinations of what's happening inside the DOJ under the second Trump administration right now. And I am thrilled to have you both with us today. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. I want to start out asking you guys, when I read this, the centerpiece of this failure mode, to my mind, is an institution that for generations was pretty locked down, was pretty small c, not politically conservative, but ideologically and managerially, it was not an organization that changed radically over time. And in the first Trump administration, we saw him pushing and pushing and pushing against DOJ to varying degrees of success. But I'd love for you guys to tell me where the breaking point in this new world came. Was it the minute Pam Bondi walked in that door, or was it when Merrick Garland dropped the ball early in the Biden administration?
It's such a good question, Rick, and your question actually takes us to exactly why we did the book. As reporters at the Washington Post together, Aaron and I were on a lot of stories chasing what was going on with the investigations of Donald Trump for election interference, for classified documents. But the breaking point that we discovered in looking at this book, if you can define it as a breaking point, was really in the first Trump administration, the scarring and damage that he did by individually targeting specific FBI agents and officials by name,
right,
going after prosecutors and demanding that they do certain things by Truth Social or by Twitter post, caused the kind of scarring that made both the Department of Justice and the FBI a little wary of this guy and a little reluctant to pursue him in the way that they would normally pursue open evidence of a crime.
I agree. It's really been a continuum that we've seen where, all those things happened in the first Trump term and happened in ways that we didn't realize were worse than we knew publicly. And then you see so many delays when Garland becomes attorney general and Biden is in.
Politico's senior writer Ankush Kadori blames Attorney General Merrick Garland for bungling the opportunity to effectively go after Trump, writing, quote, From the outset of the Biden presidency, it was readily apparent that Garland had little desire to investigate and potentially prosecute Trump.
Look, Garland and the Justice Department played an absolutely important and unintentional role here. You know, after Trump lost in 2021, there should have been a quick and robust criminal investigation into his conduct post-2020 and to his potential financial crimes, a lot of which we were on notice of at that point in time. That should have happened promptly, in part because it was always the case that Trump might run for re-election and be able to win through Democratic means. And the life cycle of a criminal case, particularly a criminal prosecution, you cannot wrap them up in 2 years, not complex ones. Right. And we've just learned that. The whole country has just learned that.
Yep.
So unfortunately, Merrick Garland came in and it was apparent from the start, you know, even when I wrote a piece after his confirmation hearing where I said, I am not sure he's actually interested in doing what may need to be done here. And, you know, the reporting from The Washington Post and The New York Times, in-depth reporting from people like Carol Lenning and others, basically reported that there was a year and a half, if not longer, delay in standing up the criminal investigation of Trump's effort to stay in power, and that they were effectively forced to do it after the January 6th committee publicly embarrassed them.
There's a reluctance on the part of FBI agents to go directly at Trump again. And, you know, that really sets the course where you end up in this sprint at the very end with Jack Smith and, you know, we're here now. But it didn't happen all over, you know, one night. It was really a series of things that led to this moment.
I'm curious. I am somewhat obsessed with Garland. I know everyone has told me that I don't know him personally. I've never met him personally. Everyone has always told me institutionalist, good lawyer, smart guy. But was the rot and the trauma from the first administration so that extraordinary that he couldn't see the road ahead, that if he waited, then everything would get polluted by the election coming up again? I mean, I got in trouble. Just a quick aside. In 2021, at the very beginning of the year, I said Trump will run again in 2024. And I got left, right, and center. People were so angry with me because they didn't want to imagine it could happen. Was that where Garland was? Did he just not think that Trump could come back again? Is that why he took that sort of lackadaisical approach to this thing?
Well, you have to think about all the things that happened in the first Trump term and how so many decisions have been pushed down.
Right. I'd rather not, but okay.
Think about how, you know, so much from the top down, and Garland was really, you know, recoiling against that and trying to set the DOJ back on a very traditional, you know, as you said, conservative footing. And, you know, we've gone back in the course of this reporting and read through so many of his speeches and things that he said, and he kept holding up Edward Leiby as his North Star, as Attorney General, the first to come in after Watergate. And he wanted to basically, you know, do that again, be the steady hand post-Watergate, instituting a bunch of reforms and getting the Department of Justice back in order. The problem here a little bit is that Edward Leiby came in July of the year after Watergate, when H.R. Haldeman had already been convicted, when John Mitchell had already been convicted, and was just a couple of days away from being sentenced. And so there was still so much to do on the investigation side, not just of the rioters and what was going on from January 6th that day, but really understanding what everybody around Trump and Trump himself had done. And they really, you know, thought that they would have all the time. You know, we, from our reporting in the book, Garland told people at the time, he thought that, you know, the image of January 6th was so profound that people were never going to vote for Donald Trump again.
Well, that did not work out like they thought. Cold mornings, holiday plans. This is the season of the year where I need my wardrobe to just work. Stuff that looks sharp, feels good, and that I'll actually reach for. That's why I've been going with Quince more and more. It makes gifting easy when everything's worth keeping for yourself. Quince has what I need, like my favorites, the Mongolian cashmere sweaters. I wear them almost every day. At Quince, you can pick one up for $50 where you'd normally drop $200 or more for the same thing. Plus, wool coats that actually hold up to daily wear and look great. Finding the right winter coat is easy with Quince. They've got amazing options and prices that make sense. Their denim fits right and feels great. The same with their pants and chinos. The outerwear, solid. Down jackets, woolen leather coats that keep you warm when it's actually cold out. They're not just for show. The quality is astounding. And cashmere beanies, scarves, and gloves that won't wreck your wallet. by partnering directly with trusted factories that maintain high standards for craftsmanship and for ethical practices, Quince cuts out the middlemen and the markups. That means premium quality at half the cost of other high-end brands. So you can give luxury pieces without the luxury price tag. Quince has gifting covered beyond clothing, too. Check out their website, where they have amazing stuff for home, bath, kitchen, travel, that you could either give as gifts or keep for yourself. Get your wardrobe sorted and your gift list handled with Quince. Don't wait. Go to quince.com/Lincoln for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/Lincoln. Free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/Lincoln. So we end up with I think the you know, Jack Smith's reputation as a brilliant prosecutor came down to collide with one fatal mistake, which was putting that case in front of a circuit that was chock full of judges that were not going to be unsympathetic to Donald Trump, and pulled the worst possible one in Eileen Cannon.
This is Eileen Cannon, the federal judge in Florida randomly assigned to oversee the criminal case against Donald Trump in the classified documents investigation. But concerns over her impartiality are already clouding the proceedings. That's because she was nominated to the federal bench in the first place by then President Trump himself.
She only has to take really small steps in order to throw this thing off track for the Justice Department.
42-year-old Cannon was born in Cali, Colombia, and grew up in Miami. She credits her mother, who fled Cuba as a young girl, as her inspiration to get involved in the U.S. legal system. She received her degree from Duke University and attended law school at the University of Michigan from 2005 to 2007. After graduation, she worked for several law firms across the country, including in D.C., Iowa, and Florida. She was officially confirmed by the U.S. Senate in November 2020. At the time of her appointment, she was a member of the Federalist Society, a conservative legal organization that is said to have influenced Trump's judicial nominations. Still, a solid resume from a qualified legal professional. But Judge Cannon's previous tie to Trump, along with her rulings in a previous lawsuit tied to the classified documents saga, are raising some eyebrows.
The opinion, I think, was wrong, and I think the government should appeal it. It's deeply flawed in a number of ways.
Judge Cannon approved Trump's request to block the Justice Department from accessing the recovered documents until they could be reviewed for potential executive privilege. A decision was appealed and eventually overturned by a conservative appeals court.
That case, I was told by somebody else who was at the FBI, they had enormous confidence in that case. Can you imagine a scenario where that case would have been brought or could have been brought a year earlier? Because it seems to me that would have been a much different outcome.
You know, Rick, your FBI source is totally right. They viewed it as a slam dunk. They'd court-martialed people for taking a fraction of that many documents and not trying to conceal them. They had people sitting in jail cells for taking, including an FBI analyst that they convicted. One of the team members, Dave Raskin, had convicted just months earlier before starting this work. They thought this was such an easy one to prove and convict. And the team, before Jack Smith inherited the case in November of 2022, when Donald Trump formally announces that he's actually running for re-election, and the team that had been working this case believed they were on the 5-yard line before a touchdown. They were that close to making a decision on indicting. And they certainly believed that in a normal situation, as one of the prosecutors said, if it was a different guy, we'd arrest him tomorrow. That's what they said the night after the raid. It seems to me it could. Of course, there was amazing new evidence that Jack Smith gathered in his first few months in that case of obstruction. About the evidence of how Trump tried to conceal the information, about his lawyer even being deceived, about the amazing iPhone notes of his lawyer saying Donald Trump told him, like, hey, you think it'd be okay if we just don't tell him we have anything? We just pretend we don't have anything here? So the obstruction evidence got stronger. But in terms of bringing a clear intentionally withholding classified national defense information. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they could have brought it.
I tell people this all the time. If I had taken home TSSCI material from the Pentagon and just kept it in a box in my bathroom, I'd be in prison right now. And that was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And that it makes no sense on that.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
So we end up, you guys tell, and I mean this as a total compliment, this is a great bureaucratic inside story. It isn't as, it isn't like a lot of explosions and car chases. This is meetings and people, inside government, inside that mechanistic thing of bureaucracy where people are trying to decide how to navigate a new world. And I want to jump now to the era we're in today, which is Pam Bondi and Todd Blanch, and I'm told Stephen Miller from the outside, running a Justice Department that has been reconfigured away from fighting terrorism, fraud, foreign intelligence services, and now fighting Jack Smith and Jim Comey and John Brennan and an expanding list of Trump's political enemies by his definition.
President Trump applying new pressure on the Justice Department to prosecute his political opponents.
This does appear to be the latest blow to keeping the Justice Department independent from the White House. President Trump ramping up the pressure on his attorney general, insisting that she go after a list of his political opponents. In a Truth Social post where Trump directly addresses Pam Bondi, writing that, quote, nothing is being done at the Justice Department and that they can't delay any longer because it's killing our reputation and credibility. Now, these comments appear to be Trump's most explicit demands yet that Bondi target his political enemies, referring to former FBI Director James Comey, California Senator Adam Schiff, and New York Attorney General Letitia James.
As much as I want to, and I do want to talk about like how the Bondi, Blanche, Patel axis is working, but what is the feeling just down the chain inside the Justice Department from line prosecutors, career professionals? They have to know what's happening here is well beyond the pale.
Well, the sources we talked to for the book, obviously, you can tell by the final chapters when you're inside the rooms as, entire classes of senior FBI officials are being summarily dismissed and they're going after all of the agents who are anybody who had their name on a January 6th case. Obviously, they know that this is a different place than we've ever been in. They knew that the week after Donald Trump was elected, we were meeting with folks who were saying, this place is going to be shredded. But it's even so much worse than they told us then that what they expected. And so there are prosecutors, there are FBI agents who I think would much rather not be dealing with what they're dealing with now. But there's a lot of folks who are, as Carol said a couple times, hanging on by their fingernails and trying to stay there and do the best they can and try to keep, as many cases as they can, running the right way, being evaluated on fairly on the evidence. And the other thing they're dealing with too is this kind of little bit of a dichotomy within the whole institution, which is that main justice and the places closest to the centers of power here are very much acting at the behest of the president. There are still 100 other, you know, U.S. attorney's offices around the country doing cases that nobody is, you know, not been in the crosshairs of the politics here, but are putting away bad guys and doing good work. And so, you know, the darkness hasn't spread it, if you will, all the way across. But, you know, there are two worlds inside the Justice Department right now. Those who are anywhere close to something that the president cares about, and those just doing everyday crime.
We're starting to see what looks like some tensions. You know, there are people in Eastern District of Virginia, in Southern District of New York, who are not willing to walk the plank on these political persecutions, I use that phrase advisedly, of Trump's enemies. And they seem to be bringing in a lot of people who are subpar, not actual prosecutors. And by that, I want to get to Lindsey Halligan and the thing we're seeing now.
The Trump prosecutor behind the indictment of former FBI Director Jim Comey is facing both praise and condemnation today. Lindsey Halligan delivered what President Trump wanted so badly.
This is big news. Many of us expected it. I think it's long overdue.
This is a mad king picking off each of his political enemies.
Today, as Trump headed to a golf tournament with his granddaughter Kai, he brushed off the criticism that he's on a revenge crusade.
Is this more about justice or is it about revenge?
It's about justice, really. It's not revenge. It's about justice. It's also about the fact that you can't let this go on. They are sick, radical left people, and they can't get away with it.
Will you appoint a permanent U.S. attorney to try this case? Lindsey Halligan has never tried a case.
Well, we'll see, but it's a pretty easy case because, look, he lied.
36-year-old Lindsey Halligan, the attorney handpicked by Trump to take on James Comey, has never even prosecuted a case. In fact, she has a background in insurance law. Lindsey worked as a model in Miami to help pay her law school tuition. She met President Trump at his Palm Beach Golf Club and joined his legal team.
Make no mistake, their goal is to put him in prison.
When he was elected president, Halligan moved to the White House as a special assistant. Now, the pressure is on her to convict Comey. Not an easy task. As the Comey indictment came down, President Trump celebrated on social media. James Dirty Cop Comey was a destroyer of lives. A very big price must be paid.
Is this kind of the future of justice? Is she under any kind of real supervision from Bondi, or is it just the White House has said to her, you're the one, go do this?
You know, Lindsey Halligan is such an interesting character in this, but emblematic of other characters we met in the book, right?
Sure.
She gets installed after Donald Trump says very publicly, I'm going to fire Eric Siebert, the U.S. attorney in Virginia, a Republican, stalwart Trump ally who said, hey, we just don't have the facts to indict a former FBI director, Jim Comey. Well, Lindsey Halligan, a former insurance lawyer, former White House staffer to Donald Trump, said, I will indict him. And 3 days after becoming a prosecutor for the first time in her life, did. Of course, we're seeing how, this is just factually true. We're seeing how her inexperience and incompetence as a prosecutor, nobody would be asked to go to a grand jury 3 days after taking their first job at DOJ. But she gave that commission to herself. And we're seeing how that inexperience is playing out. In essence, Donald Trump is getting what he wants, people to be charged. But the rest of the American people are now getting to see the flaws behind the operation. And he's not going to get a conviction. That seems very clear.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
I'm interested in that because I know Donald Trump well enough as an anthropologist of this guy, and I hate having that in my brain, but it's true, that Comey and Smith have an emotional power in Trump's mind that maybe John Brennan or somebody else does not. Okay. And I wonder if in some ways he and his people at DOJ underestimated the two people they were going up against. Jack Smith, who is a very, very, very smart prosecutor, and Comey, who is a wily sort of bureaucratic DC infighter who knows the game. Both of these men seem to be playing the game a lot better than the DOJ seems to be playing the game at this time.
Well, you've seen Jack Smith kind of go on the offensive here a little bit, right? In the past month or so. Putting out statements saying he would happily go testify before Congress, but only to do so publicly, saying that there's still a story to be told, you know, or a document, putting a spotlight on the fact that there's this whole report that is yet to be released publicly that his team put together regarding the classified documents case. You know, we did find in our reporting that there was a little bit of a bionic quality to Smith that, you know, you don't really appreciate until you know that the day that Garland calls him and asks him to be the special counsel, he's in a hospital with a compound fracture and screaming at night when the pain meds wear off, and checks himself out of the hospital because he because there's some concern that, you know, could he be on pain medications when he takes the oath of office to be special counsel, and so works out of his like home in the Netherlands in a hospital bed where his, you know, kitchen table used to be. And by the time this special counsel is up and running a few months later, he's back on his bike and riding 25 miles a day, you know, in the morning before coming in to do the special counsel work, moving quick enough that his security detail has to buy e-bikes to keep up with him. And so, you know, there is a fortitude with Smith, and, you know, with Comey, there's just there's a huge personality there, we all know, but I don't think neither one of these guys are going to be shrinking violets.
I mean, and for good and bad, I also think Trump, because he has that feral sense, he picked Comey because a lot of Democrats hate Comey because of Hillary Clinton's emails, all that stuff. But it doesn't seem like Comey has been willing to play that patsy role for Trump in this either. You know, both of these guys are they're both lawyered up with extraordinarily competent legal counsel.
The DOJ was playing a game that, you know, is old as Methuselah, right? It's always in this vein of, we speak through our court filings. The institutionalist of Merrick Garland, right? We're never going to talk publicly other than when we speak in court and when we've already thought about every subjunctive and dependent clause.
Right.
Whereas as Comey made an Instagram post and said,
"Yes, he did.
I'm innocent. Come for me. Let's go to trial." And Jack Smith, the same in his interview with Andrew Weissman, a great platform for him to say, you know, this tears at my heart to see devoted public servants being tossed out the window by Donald Trump and personally attacked and losing their jobs when all they've ever done is serve the country as patriots. And the two of them have given a voice to what DOJ was doing in a way and spoken up for themselves in a way that DOJ never did.
Right. Yeah. And I think that idea that the DOJ was always, as you said, speaking from through their filings, speaking through the work that was being done, That would never satisfy Trump, even if there were cases against these men, that he would never be happy with that.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
So I want to jump to a couple of character studies here. Talk to us about what you've learned about the sort of Pam Bondi, Cash Patel, management of DOJ and FBI, which is sort of a big part of that family. Because neither of these people, and I do know both of them, I know Bondi better than I know Patel, neither of these people are towering geniuses, but they understand the loyalty matrix around Trump. How are they both operating inside these departments, and what's the take on them from inside?
Well, you know, we were always wondering, where do we finish this book, right? Because there's something going on every day of the week that make you add another page and another outrage. But, you know, the folks inside the department were just stunned a couple months into the administration when Pam Bondi invites Donald Trump in. You remember this press conference that happens at the Department of Justice? And,
yep.
You know, they even cover up this statue of the Spirit of Justice and have these blue curtains and they pump in YMCA and this whole campaign soundtrack. And, you know, when she says in that moment that we work at the directive of Donald Trump.
And we all work for the greatest president in the history of our country. We are so proud to work at the directive of Donald Trump. It is, he will never stop fighting for us, and we will never stop fighting for him.
You know, it felt like the trajectory was clear, and, you know, there was really no hiding it at that point in time. It's just so stark a contrast to the when Garland comes in with Biden 4 years earlier, and Biden turns to him and says, "You don't answer to me, you answer to the Constitution and the American people."
Right.
And that was a shade of everything that had ever been said before when Attorney General came in. The folks, you know, obviously they're keeping very close counsel. Bondi is and Cash Patel is as well. You know, we know from our reporting that the entire seventh floor was wiped clean. You know, they were not having anybody left who was in the previous administration down to the secretaries stay in that office. And so you know, they're keeping very close. The FBI is, you know, a different beast. It's a very hierarchical, you know, almost militaristic kind of, you know, you do as your orders and you carry out the investigation. I guess the question for both of these folks, and we've seen this play out a little bit, is how far do you have to go down the line to find an agent or find a prosecutor willing to go along with what they want to do? And in the case of Halligan and the Comey case, had to go all the way to North Carolina to find somebody to go along. And so, but there are a lot of people. There's a lot of layers you can go through to eventually find somebody to go with you.
It is that line, I think, that fascinates me with, I mean, we're, like I said, early in the discussion, we're starting to see the cracks of some prosecutors who are like, nope, this ain't it. We're not taking this case. Inside the FBI, I had my source again that I spoke to from the inside of the FBI said that Patel has, you know, people are sort of eye rolling about Patel, but insulted by Bongino because the deputy has always been a lifer.
somebody who knows the institution, who is the translator to the director, if the director is not a lifetime FBI guy.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. There are two stories from the book that really amplify that. One of them, which we reported before, is about Bill Barr when the White House is considering Kaj Patel for a deputy director of the FBI. Again, not an FBI lifer.
Right.
basically, Barr walks right out of the office where he's being introduced to some various people, goes right to Mark Meadows, the White House chief of staff in the first Trump presidency, and says, "Over my dead body, do you name Patel?" He's got no experience. Now, fast forward to Bongino. Kaj Patel has a meeting with Natalie Barra of the FBI Agents Association, the president, in early January of 2025. So it's after Trump has been elected, but before the inauguration. And her view is, hey, you know, maybe this Patel guy, we can't assume he's a bad guy. He said some dramatic things about conspiracies inside the FBI and DOJ, but let's try to work with him. And when she sits down with him, she says, "I've got two requests. One, you got a lot of people you apparently want to fire inside the FBI and you think we're engaged in some sort of misconduct. Don't fire them till you get here and you get to look at the records. You get to see the files on what happened. Don't make rash decisions." He says, "Sure." Next request is, "Do not name anybody but a lifer, a long time, dedicated, on the job agent to be your deputy." And he goes, "Sure, no problem." Well, Kaj Patel's ability to deliver on that promise apparently was zero because Donald Trump decided it should be Dan Bongino.
One other character that's over there now that I think is unique in the history of the DOJ is Ed Martin. He seems to be sort of the ambassador to the insurrection of 2021. What's his game there? Is he just sort of the ideological enforcer? Because he seems to be the guy who is directing Trump on a lot of these, or encouraging Trump on a lot of these cases that you know, obviously have no merit, but he's a big right-wing cheerleader on those.
Ed Martin might wear more hats than anybody that I can recall at DOJ. He's got this title of Associate Deputy Attorney General. He's got a title of Pardon Attorney, you know, head of the Weaponization Working Group, a new construct inside the Department of Justice. But, you know,
I'll say
Ed Martin, you really have to go back to think about where he was in the months of when Trump is running for re-election and is facing all of these cases that are beginning to crash down all at the same time. And there's kind of a split screen moment that I think of with Ed Martin, which is the day that Donald Trump is in court for the classified documents case in Florida for the first time, you know, pleading not guilty. Ed Martin with Matt Gaetz and others are in D.C. putting on like a whole counter programming kind of press conference that day about, you know, how January 6th was an inside job and, you know, how all the rioters were entrapped. And this is what a lot of the media picks up on that day. I mean, if you go back and look at the Fox News coverage, the One America News coverage that day, it's a lot of that. It's not what happened, what the rest of the world is looking at.
You know, as important as the pardon discussion is, and we'll get to the bottom of it, that's not, Matt, the process that has been the most abusive in terms of weaponization, right? We've seen the January 6th defendants be weaponized against. We've seen COVID be weaponized against victims, right? So we have an obligation in the weaponization working group to follow the lead of the president. On day one, he said, "I want you to make government not weaponized." Then we had Attorney General Bondi come on, and she gave us categories to look at that were very specific, the weaponization of the law by Jack Smith and by some of the prosecutors, and that's expanded to include lawfare against, say, the electors who were doing their duty under the Constitution and are still being prosecuted across the country, lawyers who are being prosecuted. So there's a category. Attorney General Bondi said, look at these, including, by the way, school board parents, parents of school board meetings where they were targeted, Catholics were targeted, whistleblowers. So Attorney General Bondi gave us some direction, but as you say, Matt, you know, show me your priorities and I'll show you what you care about. We at the Weaponization Working Group have been spending the last 3 or 4 days, my first days on the job, developing those categories that we're going to focus on, you know, and being able to drive through Deputy Attorney General is Todd Blanche, and he said it so well. Once you know where the problems are and you're digging into them, then you find where the solutions are, whether it's referring them out for prosecution, whether it's other kinds of actions that could be available, including civil actions. And, you know, Matt, I'll say last in summary, we have an obligation to show what's happened by investigation, hold people accountable by prosecution and other means, and we also have an obligation to heal the people that have been damaged. And, you know, I got an earful from Senator Tillis saying, are you for reparations? And he wanted to talk all about that. What I'm for is when the government destroys someone and their life and their livelihood and their family, you're darn right they should be made whole. That's real equity, to get people back to where they were before they were weaponized against by the government. And we shouldn't be afraid of that. You know, the left uses it to be dishonest and to bribe each other and to be corrupt. We should do it to be honorable and to help heal. And that's what everybody from Nelson Mandela back in the era when he and Desmond Tutu said we're going to reform ourselves. Everybody knows this is how you move forward, is identify who the wrongdoers were, hold them accountable the ways you can, and then heal the people that have been really hurt.
Ed Martin has, you know, been very focused on the narrative of January 6th for a long time, with a lot of success on that side of the political aisle. And, you know, here he is with this amazing platform now to continue to push that narrative.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
You guys are better equipped than almost any other two human beings that I know to debunk one of those big lies right now. The FBI did not cause January 6th. They did not organize January 6th. They were not the people behind the scenes on January 6th. Can we just, I mean, that is one of those things I get asked by people, even people who are now like, are you sure? They say there were 400 agents there on the ground in the crowd. I'm like, No, it wasn't.
1,000% false. 1,000% right. False. I mean, we actually have the receipts in the book, and we can point you to the chapter. Mm-hmm. There are two things the FBI comes across in our book as doing. One, completely flubbing the response and the preparation for a domestic terror act that's in the planning stages up until January 6th. And the next is, yes, hundreds of agents swarm from three different SWAT teams, Baltimore, Washington, and right. another one outside of D.C. They're being commandeered to come to Washington to help with this unbelievable breach that starts at roughly, you know, 1:52 p.m. when Capitol Police Chief Sund is on a massive switchboard radio saying, Capitol breach, send everyone here. I remember getting a text from a Secret Service source who said, we've just been told everyone with a gun, you know, everyone with a service weapon, come to the Capitol and start staging.
Just to underline that a little bit.
Crazy.
The one of the chapters in our book, I think, is probably the only time somebody's told the story of January 6th and from entirely inside the Department of Justice. And so you're inside the
right.
You're inside the Washington Field Office Command Center. You're inside the Attorney General's office. You're inside as the, you know, the call comes in with the SWAT team and the hostage rescue team that wants to rappel down onto the Capitol rotunda, and there's permission denied. Right. They don't want, you know, these guys coming in with the guns drawn. But it's really all, it's a reaction. They are entirely reacting to what's going on that day. They are not in it. They have no idea what's happening until all of a sudden it's too late. And that 400 number that's thrown around a lot, it's an undercount. It was hundreds more than that. In fact, from all across DOJ, you know, that did respond in kind that night to clear the Capitol, but that was their charge, was to go in and get folks out.
I just, when I was looking through the book, that story is one that is so pernicious, and is Ed Martin, to loop back on him, is driving that story heavily, pretending that FBI agents were there, and Patel amplified it recently. So I know we're running up on time, guys, but I want to ask you about the issue that is a little past the book in some ways. We're now in a world where Pam Bondi has a signed law. The Epstein Accountability Act has been signed even by this president. And in 30 days, hypothetically, ostensibly, allegedly, she's going to have to turn over those documents. I am willing to sell people swampland that we will not see those documents in 30 days. What do you think about the way that the Epstein issue has warped DOJ even further than anybody could have anticipated?
You know, Donald Trump has been uncomfortable and twitchy about the Epstein files for so long. It's hard to remember when that began being of concern to him. But I notice, and I think most people do too, that are watching this unfold, that he clearly has been briefed on everything that's in it, or the highlights of what's in the files that the DOJ can control. Because every now and then he will tweet a name of some Democrat he believes is mentioned in the files and should be investigated. I guess what my takeaway from all of this is, just as we found in the book, Donald Trump is fantastic at projecting onto others the things that make him uncomfortable about whatever is in his closet. You know, in the book, we describe how he rewrites history to say January 6th was a pleasant picnic, and these guys were patriots. There was a lot of love.
Hundreds of thousands of people come to Washington. They didn't come because of me. They came because of the election. They thought the election was a rigged election, and that's why they came. Some of those people went down to the Capitol. I said, peacefully and patriotically, nothing done wrong at all. Nothing done wrong. And action was taken, strong action. Ashley Babbitt was killed. Nobody was killed. There were no guns down there. We didn't have guns. The others had guns, but we didn't have guns. And when I say we, these are people that walked down. This was a tiny percentage of the overall, which nobody sees and nobody shows. But that was a day of love from the standpoint of the millions. It's like hundreds of thousands. It could have been the largest group I've ever spoken before.
In the book, we describe how he's able to rewrite history and say that the Department of Justice under Biden was weaponized against him and Republicans. He's been doing a really good job, I have to say, with his Senate
with his
counterparts
base.
And Lindsey Graham and Josh Hawley and others in claiming
Ted
that
Cruz,
an election interference case that had to focus on Republicans who signed fraudulent certificates somehow was, you know, unfairly pointed at Republicans. Well, it was pointed at Republicans because Democrats didn't sign those certificates that were frauds,
right?
Claiming that Trump had won those swing states that he had not won. So in the Epstein situation, there's that same current of like, let me rewrite history and tell you about how all these dirty Democrats were in league with Epstein. Except we have all the video to show that he was very, very close friends and relied on Epstein for lots of things.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about, you know, the fact that they deployed 1,000 employees at DOJ and FBI to scan through the Trump files, to look at them and enter occurrences of his name in the SharePoint document, that they didn't think through for a second that the Democrats could have control of Congress this time next year, or that somebody could get a court order to release those names and find out and start interviewing those people one at a time and start going through the forensic computer trail of this. because he doesn't want his name out further than it's been. And the percentage of mentions of his name in that tranche of documents the House just released was quite high. I wonder how much more we're going to see of him inside this material, or not see of him if they cover it up effectively.
Well, you know, one of the things that's been amazing to us is the people who came and talked to us for this book and told us stories that they would never thought to put out there publicly, but feel like, you know, America needs to know. And, you know, there were a lot of people, because of the exact operation you described, that touched the, have now touched those Epstein files inside DOJ. And, you know, what clarity and visibility they all have. You know, I do think there's probably a contingent of folks who want to make sure that the whole truth is told. And, you know, whether that all comes out in the next 30 days or eventually, I do believe there's going to be people who are pressing on this.
Yeah, we're in a remarkable moment of a DOJ that's been transformed completely. And I don't know what the path back is after this is all over. I mean, when this is done, when Trump shuffles off this mortal coil, let's just hypothesize there's a new a Democratic president in 2020, just hypothetically. Does justice's sort of central tendency go back to where it's been historically, or does it need a reform effort now? Because I'm sure they're going to park as many people in there as they can, the stay behind agents. What do you think is the future of the DOJ in the post-Trump era?
You know, Aaron and I've talked about this a lot with our sources because, you know, some of them are obviously, as we described, still holding on as tight as they can. I love this venerable institution. It's beloved to them. It's crushing their hearts to see it mangled in the way it is, bringing cases where there isn't a probable cause or factual basis, that the president deciding what's a good case, whole divisions being ripped asunder, as we describe in the book, you know, public integrity in section, you know, so much for public corruption. We just don't worry about that anymore. But those folks are worried about exactly the thing you ask, Rick. How do we approach it when another president's in charge? Because if Democrats fire Kash Patel as the FBI director when they seize the White House, assuming they do, then they will look just as political as Trump did. Now the FBI director will be a political position, even though many people can't see a world in which they would ever consider keeping Kash Patel. So there's this straddle discussion going on about something in between, you know, a Pam Bondi DOJ and a Merrick Garland DOJ. I've heard a lot of people describe something post-Watergate that's even more nuclear, in which there's a like an inviolable bubble that has to go around like shrink wrap around DOJ and separate it so cleanly from the White House and from presidential politics in a way that, you know, even Watergate apparently did not properly do in advance of Donald Trump becoming president.
Aaron and Carol, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. Folks, the book is Injustice: How Politics and Fear Vanquished America's Justice Department. You should read it. It is really one of the most important subjects we're going to cover in talking about how do you maintain a country with the rule of law if the Department of Justice, that's the pinnacle of the law enforcement food chain in the country, has been corrupted by politics. It is a great internal history. It goes through the nuts and bolts, folks. You will really enjoy it. And again, I'm very grateful to both of you. Thank you for coming on today.
Thanks for you, Rick. Us.
The Lincoln Project Podcast is a Lincoln Project production. Executive produced by Whitney Hayes, Ben Howe, and Joey Wartner-Cheney. Edited by Riley Main. Hey, folks, if you want to support the Lincoln Project's work against Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and this MAGA craziness, go to action.lincolnproject.us/helplp. If you'd like to get in touch or have suggestions for a guest or a show topic, or just want to say hi, our email is podcast@lincolnproject.us. For our MAGA friends, please, no more nudes. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Good night, and good luck.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.